Ballistic Radio. Join us as we discuss hard-won self-defense lessons, as well as the information you need to survive a violent encounter. Listen as armed professionals, industry experts, and gunfight survivors help answer all your firearms and self-defense questions while exploring your rights and responsibilities as an armed citizen. Ballistic Radio, just the facts. And now, here's your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio. I'm your host, John Johnson. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com. Get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, silliness, other things, stuff, at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Coasting with me, Jack-Jack.
Yay!
How's it going, Jack-Jack?
It's going good. Having a good day.
Good. I'm glad. So, we got all sorts of interesting things happening. This is the last show of the season with a guest. We're gonna finish strong. We got Ben Steger on tonight. We're gonna be talking about stuff. I'll get to that in a second.
What else? Stuff and things, or just stuff?
Maybe things.
Okay. I don't want to get too technical.
No, we shouldn't. I mean, is that technical? Yeah. What else? Going to Florida this week. Gonna be hanging out with some peoples.
Boop.
Doing some stuff. More stuff. Look at that.
More stuff, but no things. Just stuff.
People are like changing the station right now. You realize that, right? We'll be updating you throughout the week as we work on, I was going to say stuff or things.
Alrighty then.
Oh. Hey, just a quick reminder. This segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat makes you the finest custom 1911s, ARs, and scatterguns since 1977. Legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories at www.wilsoncombat.com. Without further ado, Ben Steger. Ben, how's it going, man?
Super. How are you guys doing today?
Well, apparently I'm getting over a cold or going through puberty. I can't tell which, but I'm listening to myself going, huh, well, I don't sound so great. But other than that, I'm amazing. How are you?
It is another wonderful Sunday night.
Well, there you go. So for those that don't know, could you, let people know who you are real quick and then we'll hop right in.
Sure. I do, USPSA, competition. That's kind of my calling in life. That's kind of how I like to think about it. That's action shooting, with handguns. So, I mean, that's what I do. And then for work, I teach other people to do that better. So I travel around and give seminars on how to shoot better.
Well, and
that's pretty much it.
You're being incredibly humble. You've won production nationals for a couple years in a row now. Am I making that up?
Yeah, I've been a national champion for the last 5 years.
Wow, the last five. So that's kind of hard to win. There's all sorts of pretty legit dudes that are shooting for that title.
Yeah, I know, man. It's like, yeah, I have to put in a lot of work. Let me put it that way.
Yeah.
Like, I live in the frozen tundra of the north in Wisconsin here, and I had to travel south just to get some training time in the warmer weather. And so I spent a couple weeks in January just training.
Well, there you go.
I can't do it at home. Yeah.
I guess where I want to start first is, you know, and one of the big conversations that happens a lot in our industry. I don't know how interesting it'll be to the people that are maybe new to the show or not, but it's something that I'm interested in is context, or another way to look at that, I guess, knowing the audience of who we're talking to. Because there seems to be, for whatever reason, a lot of infighting that occurs between people that are competition shooters, or at least people that follow competition shooting, whether or not they go out and shoot. And also the people that are interested in the tactical self-defense side of things, once again, questionable whether or not they go out and shoot sometimes as well. But there seems to be this, my camp is better than your camp, and talking about things, and there's no discussion of, well, maybe it's cool that we do stuff different over here because it's a different application. Thoughts on that?
Oh man, where do you start? Yes, there's quite a lot of infighting in the shooting community, of course. And, I think, pretty much everybody thinks they're smarter than everybody else.
Huh.
I mean, yeah, I think you find that pretty much all walks of life, right? Everybody is you know, the smartest guy. So especially the competition shooters, the circles that I run in, we think we're the best because we have the most technical skill, right. And we shoot the most, I think. We probably shoot the most rounds of anybody. We have the most technical skill.
Yeah.
And then people who do, you know, defensive shooting, they're the best because they have, better mindset, tactics, a lot more context, legal training. All sorts of stuff you need to know to be sort of proficient with that stuff. And I think probably plenty of those people look down through their nose at competition shooting. And then, you know, pretty much everybody looks down through their nose at the new shooters, right?
Well,
people who don't really know much come in.
Well, and I think that's really kind of where a lot of the problems occur because, you know, in a perfect world, we would be encouraging people to join our sport, whatever discipline of our sport that happens to be, letting them figure out, hey, here's what I'm interested in, here's what I'm not, passing along good information and rainbows and unicorns and stuff like that. And it doesn't seem to work that way.
Right. Well, don't like things that I don't like. Sort of that's a very human reaction with it. Like if somebody goes to a movie and they really liked it and you hated it, now you gotta like talk them out of liking it or tell them they're stupid for liking it, which, I mean, if it's all in fun, that's fine. But there comes a point where you just kind of let people be interested in the things that they want to be interested in, do the things that they want to do, and, you know, live and let live.
There are people that are listening to this and going, is Ben Steger okay? Is he feeling all right? Does he have a fever?
Hey, all in fun. I love making fun of people.
Yeah.
Or, you know, ideas or stuff. I mean, all in fun. But when it comes down to it, like, I don't really care. You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't care. If you want to dress up in multicam and go do a rifle course and your day job is you do IT or something.
Yeah.
I think that's not how I would spend my time. That's not anything that has anything to do with your life. But if you think that's fun, go for it.
Well, that's rather like even keeled of you, Ben.
I know plenty of there's plenty of guys in my gun club that are that guy.
Yeah.
You know that they. But what's interesting about the guys that I hang out with is they don't have any delusions, right?
Yeah.
They're like, yes, I just go do rifle courses and, you know, have a vest and do like reloads and practice team tactics with a rifle. I just do that because I think it's fun.
Well, and that's
kind of like, okay.
That's a good spot to pause for a second because we've got to go to break. Right now we're talking with Ben Steger. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio! This segment brought to you by Darkstar Gear! Whether you know the color of the boathouse in Hereford, or only know the color of your mom's basement walls and soul-crushing disappointment at your poor life choices, Darkstar Gear has a solution to your gear-carrying needs! Check out their clip-on holster for small semi-autos and revolvers, or their highly adjustable full-size AIWB holster. Why don't I have grandchildren yet? They even have a belt wrap sheath for popular fixed blade centerline knives to really tie your everyday carry together, like that one rug I used to have before the golfer ruined it. Designed, developed, and pressure tested for real life, not 15-second vignettes.
Ooh.
Find out more at darkstargear.com. So we're joined by Ben Steger tonight.
Hey, did you write that ad?
Did I write that ad? I did write that ad. I know.
You gotta lighten up on the 90s movie references. You're aging yourself.
It's my birthday in like 2 weeks. And what?
How old are you going to be? Can you say?
Yes, I can say. I'm going to be 33. So that's.
It's my birthday in 2 weeks as well.
That's, it just got, and Jack's
just. And I'll be 32. I'm serious.
When's your birthday? What day?
March 7th.
Mine's March 2nd. So that's, Jack's just like, and people are going
this
away.
This is what they turned in for.
Nobody didn't even care about any of it earlier. It's just entertainment.
So anyway, yes, 90s movie references. I am dating myself horribly, but that's okay.
Yeah, you are.
Jack, you just stay over there.
I'm not saying anything.
All right. So we'll sort of switch gears a little bit. Kind of what I want to talk about is recoil control, recoil management. That seems to be, you know, after we get sight alignment and trigger control down, where a lot of people start to fall apart is firing more than one round at a time with any sort of speed. Any tips, tricks, thoughts, you know, let's talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, what I like to do is get people to start way closer to the targets. And once you get the way you want to hold the gun down, the way you want to press the trigger, you probably want to practice that dry. You don't even need to use any ammo. Just practice drawing the gun until it comes into, you know, the same grip every time.
Right.
And then start close to a target. I mean, like a regular USPSA target, or would it be, probably most of your listeners would use the FBI too.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. Start close, like 3 yards.
Yep.
You know, real close. And then instead of shooting your speed and then starting to speed up, work from the assumption that with a normal gun, I mean, like a full-size gun that you'd probably be training with on the range, you're going to be able to shoot it as fast as you can pull the trigger and keep it on the queue or keep it in the A zone of a USPSA target. Start there and work from that. So I would start people immediately. You're going to shoot as fast as you can pull the trigger. And then you're going to learn to control it that way, as opposed to start shooting really slow and then speed up a little bit by little until you send one out of the A zone, or you let one, you know, one shot slips and then you kind of back off and you kind of very progressively work up your speed. I don't do that. It's as fast as you can pull the trigger right from the get-go. But a lot of interesting things happen with the way you start holding the gun. You know, you start wanting to jerk the trigger, you know, or push the gun down in anticipation of the recoil that you know is coming.
Right.
And you basically learn to run the gun where you just hold on to it and let it recoil, and you're not really fighting it, but you kind of get more into the management part of it. But I'm a pretty firm believer of starting fast, you know, as fast as is safe. You know, draw the gun, grip the gun hard, run it as fast as you can pull the trigger, and then learn to control it, as opposed to starting slow.
Well, let me ask you this. Something that I have run into with some of the shooters that I've worked with is they're very technically skilled shooters or very competent shooters, but for whatever reason, they tend to slow themselves down a lot more. I mean, and this is something that I've been guilty of in the past as well, where it seems like they've almost got a mental block where they won't allow themselves to shoot past a certain speed. And do you think that the way that you're describing would just circumvent that to begin with?
Yeah, well, if that doesn't work, if what I'm talking about doesn't work, if shooting the target at 3 yards doesn't work, then I take the target out of the equation entirely. And just have people, it sounds crazy, but have people dump rounds into the berm as fast as they can pull the trigger. And what usually ends up happening is they'll be looking at a spot on the berm and shooting, and all the shots hit more or less in that spot as fast as they can pull the trigger. I'll just get them to shoot faster and faster until they're doing what I want them to do. And it doesn't usually take that long. And they'll be like, okay, I'm looking at a spot on the berm, pulling the trigger as fast as I can, and the gun will come right back to that spot that I'm looking. And I'm, you know, learning to hang onto the gun as it's kind of kicking around. And they look right through it, and they kind of dump it, spitting rounds onto the berm. So by taking the target out of the equation, their mental block, your training is, I want to hit the target in the center every shot. You know, that's it. That's what I want to do.
Right.
But, you know, so if you just take the target away for a while, people can learn a lot more because they're not afraid of missing. You know, there's nothing to miss. I mean, that's not the point of it, but, you know, that it's just learn to control the gun. And then we'll, you know, put the target back into the equation.
Huh. Okay.
I have some very different ideas about this.
Well, I mean, you know, I've been wanting to come and shoot with you for I think a couple years now. We've talked about it. I've not gotten around to making the time, which I've, you know, is my loss. But I mean, it's really interesting to me to see what people do differently inside of the industry, you know, between very skilled shooters. You know, because I've gone and shot with a lot of other competition guys, and it's always fun to sort of see things like that and what's done different.
Well, Yeah, I work with, the students that I have a very diverse background, and sometimes there's a language barrier, you know?
Right.
So just making people try certain things, depending on how their brain is wired, a lot of times it'll click for them. They'll be like, oh, okay, I get it now. Do that thing.
Right.
And I've had other people, to teach them to shoot fast, I have them just hold the gun and point it at a target, and then I'll run the trigger for them as fast as I can pull the trigger, and then they kind of see what it feels like, and they're like, oh, I can kind of control it. Wow. That's another thing that can work for people.
So as far as grip goes, I know you said just squeeze the gun hard, and that's very simplistic for some folks. If somebody has, I'm very lucky that my hands are for the most part normal size, and I've got pretty good grip strength, so it's not that difficult for me to do it. But for someone that's got, maybe a compromised grip for whatever reason, either due to hand size or strength or whatever, what are some of the finer points of that?
If they have compromised?
Yeah, or just maybe their hands are smaller, or, I guess what I'm asking is, what are some of the, outside of just squeeze the gun really hard, is there anything,
yeah,
anything finer to talk about going on there?
Of course. Well, with your grip, I might depart from a lot of popular opinion on this. I don't think it is most critical how strong your hands are. So what's popular, especially in competitive shooting circles, is these captains of crush grippers to build up more grip strength.
Yeah.
Have you, you've probably been exposed to this.
Yeah, I've worked them before.
Yeah, so I don't think, based on my observations, I don't think that people's hands being too weak is the problem.
Okay.
It really isn't. Even if it's I've seen chicks with really small hands and not particularly strong hands, it doesn't really matter so much how strong your hands are. I mean, stronger hands is good, sure, but it's not about making your hands stronger. It's just using the strength that you have consistently.
Okay.
So getting people to do that, especially when, with competitive shooters like to dry fire, so they're practice drawing the gun constantly. I'm always on people, every time you draw the gun, you're going to practice gripping it hard, like you're actually going to be shooting it.
Okay.
That's the number one thing as far as developing a better grip is practicing every time you draw the gun, you grip it hard, every time.
So if you're dry firing properly, you should be worn out by the time you're done with it.
Most people can't do 15 minutes. Like 15 minutes is a long time.
Okay.
Because you can think about how hard you would grip like a pull-up bar if you're doing a pull-up. You're going to be using all that strength on your gun to hold it in place.
Right.
So, 15 minutes is a lot of dry fire until you kind of get into it and start developing. Your hands will develop a little bit more. The other thing that's important, of course, is consistency. Like your hands have to go to the same place every time. There's a lot. I mean, you can argue the minutia of where to place your fingers and how to angle your hands and things like that. Based on my observations, I haven't found that stuff to matter a whole lot. So long as whatever people are doing, they do it the same way every time, because that's how you're going to develop. Being able to look at a spot, draw the gun, point at that spot without having to mess around with the sight alignment.
Huh. So how do you? Let me think of how to ask this question. What is the quickest or easiest way to develop consistency then? We got about 2 minutes left in this segment.
Yeah, so to develop consistency of your grip, it's going to come from drawing.
Okay.
Because for whether you're a tactical guy or, concealed carry permit holder or competition shooter, you're constantly working out of the holster. So the gun starts in the holster. You're going to draw it up, put it in your hands, grip it, and point it at something, usually.
Right.
Or you can also train to, for a concealed carry permit holder, you might not want to train to draw and point it at something, really. You just draw and point down at the ground.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Work on the consistency element, and, lots of repetition from that is key. That is how you develop consistency with your grip. And, of course, you can decide on how you want your grip. You can go to the range and experiment holding the gun a few different ways and just pick what you like the best, see the way the sights track, whatever you feel most comfortable with, and then you go home and you repeat that over and over again until every time the gun comes out of the holster, it comes into your hands the way you've decided that you want it. And then when you go back to the range and shoot again, you'll probably have made some progress on that.
Well, so let me ask you this. With something like that, when we're working skills in dry fire, and we got about 50 seconds left here, but would that be where we're moving slow and adjusting things until we get it exactly the way we want it and then start progressing on speed, or would we still be going, in your opinion, just as fast as we can?
I like to go slow motion until you get, you know, kind of get the basics, the broad strokes of it down, and then go kind of your natural pace. And then for most people, they'd spend most of the time pushing a little bit. Not to the point where they're, you know, dropping their gun on the ground or being real crazy, just pushing yourself a little bit to where you're not going your comfortable pace. If you're comfortable during all of your training, you're probably not making a lot of progress. You're probably just going to be too slow. Well, as soon as you get put under some pressure to be fast, then it falls apart.
All right. Let's stop right there because we've got to go to break. We're talking with Ben Steger right now. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. This segment brought to you by TopGunSupply.com. TopGunSupply.com is your web source for fine firearms parts and accessories. True Product Specialist committed to delivering the highest level of customer support to you. They carry top name brands including Ed Brown, Wilson Combat, Les Berry 6-Hour, and many more, as well as premium AR pattern rifles. Whether you are looking to protect yourself or a first-time gun buyer or competitive shooter, TopGunSupply.com can satisfy your firearms needs. TopGunSupply.com, your premier source for SIG parts and accessories. It's really hard to read the ads when I can't breathe through my nose. It's like, all right. So, Ben, before the break, we were talking about recoil management, shooting a little bit quicker. You were saying that if you're not uncomfortable in your training or practice, you're probably not shooting fast enough.
Yes. Maybe not just not shooting fast enough, or if you're not uncomfortable in some way, you're not making progress with whatever it is you're working on, whether it's, you know, reloading faster or drawing faster, whatever you're working on.
Right.
You know, you're going to be a little bit uncomfortable. You're going to make mistakes when you're pushing to get better and make gains.
Well,
I can't even count how many times I miss targets, you know, that I know I can hit, but I will shoot misses or make mistakes very frequently in my own training. Because I'm pushing it, you know, I'm trying to do something new or trying to do something better or making a change to my technique.
Right.
You're gonna make mistakes. And I don't like stigmatizing, you know, making mistakes in your training.
Let me ask you this. Let's backtrack just slightly because we were talking about removing the target when we start shooting faster to let people be okay with missing when they're learning that. What do you see as far as your sights goes at various ranges? I mean, a lot of different people will talk about how they use the sights, how they don't use the sights. Can you discuss that for a second?
Sure. At most, so for a USPSA match, I mean, most of the time the targets are 15 yards or closer.
Yeah.
So if it's a target, you know, for people who don't know what I'm talking about, big size of a person, and you want to shoot him pretty much in the center of the chest.
Right.
Right? So this should, you know, everybody knows what I'm talking about now. So like a 6-inch wide, you know, zone in the center of a person. That's what you want to hit.
Right.
But the way that the scoring system is set up, it's you don't really get penalized too hard for not hitting in the center. Like getting, you know, hits a little bit outside of that, that's not great. But the way you're going to win is shooting fast enough that, you know, you're going to make it an attempt to land every shot in the center. But if a few slip out here and there, that's not so bad. Missing the target entirely, that is a very bad thing.
Right.
So you kind of run in a tightrope for a competition. 15 yards and in, I feel comfortable most of the time just focusing on the target and using the sights, but the sights appear blurry.
Right.
So I'm very comfortable with that.
So like a
focus shooting.
So like a pass-through sight picture, or for those that are familiar, what Jim Cirillo would have called a silhouette sight picture.
Sure. But, I mean, it's the same sight picture. It's just blurry.
Yeah.
You know?
So you're not focused on the front sight. You're focused on
the
target.
Your eyes are binary. You're going to focus on one thing or some other thing.
Yeah.
That's just the way they work. And the reason that I'm going to opt to shoot target focused is because I don't have time, or I don't need to spend the time, I should say, to pull my eye back to the front sight. Because every time you focus on the front sight, it takes a couple tenths of a second for your eye to switch focal points.
Right.
So that's why it's advantageous in terms of time to not do that. I think, you know, that makes sense to a lot of people pretty intuitively. At closer ranges, 5 yards, 7 yards, something like that, I might just be looking over the top of the gun, and I'll see a dot or a blur from my fiber sight.
Right.
And I'll just use that. That's fine. At longer ranges, switching on to front sight focus is something that becomes necessary for me.
And a lot of people seem to confuse that, too, when you start talking about things like this. They're like, well, you're point shooting, and that's not what this is.
Well, it's a question of terminology.
Right.
I write books about this subject as well. And what I mean, I kind of say, like, I can call my aiming technique elephant and yours banana. That doesn't really matter.
Right.
You know, you got to read through it and understand the mechanics. To some people, that may well be point shooting. If somebody says, are you point shooting to me, or we start discussing point shooting, that's never enough. We need to agree on what it is specifically that we're talking about, because point shooting is one of those terms that nobody really agrees on a definition for it. So it's not really useful.
Yeah, I've had arguments.
Very specific.
I've had arguments with people that I probably don't have the weight to be arguing with about what point shooting is or is not.
It's not a productive argument.
It's not.
It doesn't matter what. I mean, let's talk about how exactly you're aiming.
Yeah.
I mean, there might be situations where if the target is 1 yard away from me, where I just use my arms and I kind of have the feel of where my arms are pointed, and that's enough to aim.
Yeah, yeah.
That might happen.
Yeah,
you might call that point shooting. I might not. It doesn't mean that's irrelevant.
Right. Right.
Like I'm using the feel of my arms saying.
Kinesthetic alignment or something. Anyway, proprioception.
Yes.
Too many
jokes.
That's
another term. I don't know what that means either. But
it's okay. We'll back up and go somewhere else now. let's talk about trigger control too, I guess. So there's this conversation about, you know, staging triggers, not staging triggers, snatching the trigger, shooting to reset, all this stuff. Does that matter as long as you're just pressing the trigger straight to the rear in some iteration or another?
Well, I have two observations about this that are pretty sweeping, but I think they're useful.
Okay.
So with all those schools of thought, whether it's pin and reset or prep and press or trigger slapping, not in the negative way of you slap the trigger, but there's a school of trigger control technique that's pretty popular in USPSA circles called trigger slapping.
Yeah.
You can put any one of those things into your brain and learn to press the trigger straight.
Yeah.
I mean, that is true. And there are top level shooters who will tell you that they do all of those things or do one of, you know, they'll be like, hey, I do this thing. I do pin and reset. That's what I do.
Yeah.
One guy might say, I do prep and press. That's what I do. All of those schools of thought will produce really good shooters. The other side of that is it is frequently the case that people will tell you they do it one way, and then if you watch them doing high-speed footage, they will not be doing it that way. Does that make sense?
So how valuable would you say it is to videotape your training sessions?
It's valuable because you get to see what you're doing. But you might see a guy who's really good at shooting and is like, hey, you should prep and press. That's what you do. Prep the trigger up to the wall, up to the break point, and then press through once the sights tell you it's time. And then if you watch that same guy in with high-speed footage, you might think that doesn't look like that's what he's doing.
Right.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Wow, this has been very... very, very. You're not taking any strong stands here on anything.
On what?
On anything, which is, I really.
Well, I mean, I could. I mean, to be honest, I I have strong feelings about it, but my feelings are more like, I will very strongly tell people, like, hey, here's the schools of thought on this trigger control thing.
Right.
You could adopt any one of them and practice it, and you could become a great shooter. The reality, what I think people do is they're going to develop a continuum of techniques or a bunch of different techniques for different types of targets. That's what I advocate. I tell people to do that. You know, so if it works for you at longer range, slower shooting to pin and reset, that's fine. That's right. Fine by me. Because I've seen good shooters do it both ways. That's totally cool. If you're going to shoot a target that's really close and you're shooting as fast as you can pull the trigger, so like 4 or 5 shots a second,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to pin and reset, or you're telling me that you're going to prep and press, you're not. I mean, people don't work that way. It's not possible to prep and press when you're shooting 4 or 5 shots a second. It's not going to happen.
Well, I think the reason why I brought up, and this is not speaking directly to what you just said, but just in general, why I brought up, you know, the fact that you were being very reasonable about all of this is it's intriguing to me how, one, people progress in the industry as far as their thoughts and viewpoints and how they discuss them, and two, the reputations that people get versus the reality of that. And we don't need to go there right now because we've only got.
Well, sure, no, I get it. I have the reputation of a wanker, but the realities may be different. I mean,
I like you for it, so it's okay.
Yeah, Greg, I do professionally. I train people, so I have a lot of conversations like this all the time.
Let me interrupt because I'm a jerk, but we have to go to commercial break. Right now, we're talking to Ben Steger. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. This segment brought to you by TacStrike Steel Target Systems, makers of the quarter scale steel target and the arch frame target stand, which are literally the best steel targets and target stands I've ever used. Hit their steel targets with more than 70,000 rounds of rifle, pistol, and shotgun ammunition without a single problem. For more information, visit them at TacStrike.com. So, Ben, before the break, and I'm sorry for interrupting, but you were talking about the reputation versus the reality, and we're getting ready to discuss teaching professionally, and then the commercial came up. I apologize.
Yeah. Well, I mean, everybody has a reputation, and what's interesting about shooting is there's a big internet community, and then there's, you know, going around and actually meeting people, and most people are not what you think you meet them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I know this guy, John Johnson, who might – you might not like him very much on Facebook, but he's a really nice guy, for example. You know what I mean?
I've heard that. So a lot, actually, which makes me sad. It's like, I wonder what I should be nicer to people. Well, no, anyway.
So how you want to do it, it's okay.
Yeah, I know. It's like, oh, man, I've made mistakes. But here's what do you think that people are not thinking about enough when they get serious about shooting, when they become a hobbyist, and it's something that, you know, I'm not talking to people that just go out and they buy a gun for self-defense, stick it in the drawer and leave it, and that's all the thought they ever put into it. But, you know, someone that gets serious in the shooting, whether it's on the Timmy side of things or the competition or whatever, what's not thought about enough?
I guess it would really depend on what they're doing. I'm not sure how to answer that.
Yay, broad sweeping question. Go.
Yes, like what's not thought about enough? No, it depends on your application, I suppose. I think it's nice to remember that, you know, you kind of do what you want to do. And for me, I do this. I do what I do for fun. At least I got into it for fun. And I need to remind myself constantly, like, hey, you know what? You do this for fun.
Let me ask you. Let me ask you this. At this point, is it still fun for you?
Yeah. It's actually more fun than it's ever been. But at the same time, there's more challenges than there's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's challenging to keep it fun, but at the same time, I'm having tons of fun. Like I've gotten to shoot plenty of matches. You know, around the U.S., outside of the U.S. I travel all over the place constantly. I have a lot of fun. I meet a lot of fun people. But at the same time, I've cut out the stuff that is not fun, that does not add to my enjoyment. So, I mean, like posting match videos or you know, dissecting my own shooting in detail on the internet, that's not fun for me anymore.
Right.
Like, I don't enjoy that. So I just don't do it. A lot of times I'm expected to be certain places to attend certain matches just because, you know, that's what I've done in the past. So there's an expectation there.
Right.
So other people kind of put pressure on me. It's like, you know, I try to get away from that stuff, you know, cause I want to keep it fun.
Do you think that people lose sight of that a little too frequently inside of the industry people in particular, that they don't look at the fact that at the end of the day, this should, if it's your hobby, hopefully be fun?
Let me put it this way. There's plenty of industry people, like hardcore, like industry people that I've met in competitive shooting that I'm convinced are not having any fun.
Yeah.
Not anymore. And I say that, this might sound weird, but I'm an industry outsider.
Yes.
You know, I'm not tied into major gun companies or anything. I do my own thing.
Right.
And I go and I try to enjoy myself. But yes, there's plenty of people that don't have fun, and it's a job. It's only a job. Where instead, I mean, I think you have this attitude too, where it's like, hey, this is a really cool thing I get to do. Like that I can make a living doing stuff that I'm genuinely interested in. That's like a big win.
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, it's been interesting for me to try and balance the enjoyment aspect of it versus the work aspect of it, and not fall into that trap of not understanding how incredibly lucky I am to do what I do, you know?
Well, here's a good example. Like if I'm teaching, it might be 8 or 9 hours on a range outside.
Yep.
And it takes a lot of mental effort. You know, it's not the funnest thing in the world to, well, everybody else goes and eats lunch. Now it's time for me to go practice.
Yeah.
You know, well, I'm might be tired. I'm not really feeling it right at that moment, but you know, got to practice sometime. Like those are the moments that, man, you get to just remind myself, like, hey, if I was, you know, sitting in an office somewhere, I'd be stoked to go shoot on my lunch break.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's be happy about this.
Well, yeah, and it's, you know, it's one of those conversations that trying to have with people that that don't get to do that sort of stuff. They have zero sympathy, you know, rightfully so, and I understand that. It's funny. Just because I think that's something that people miss out a lot too, is they start taking themselves or this thing so seriously.
Yeah.
And it causes problems, you know, even in trying to get better. But so we got a couple minutes left in the show. If people want to go to a class with you or buy one of your books or, you know, watch some of your videos or stuff like that, how can they do that? Where can they do that?
If you go to Ben Steger, STOEGER, bensteger.com, that's kind of a portal. You can click on Take a Class and see my schedule. I'm pretty full. I'm all over the U.S. You know, for this year, being, you know, Tennessee, Wisconsin, California, Texas, Florida, everywhere. I mean, I go everywhere.
Right.
If you want to get in touch with me that way. If you're interested in a book, I have plenty of stuff on offer on Amazon. If you find something that suits you, whether it's a, you know, dry fire training manual or a competitive shooting live fire thing, or just a technique book, like, hey, how do I hold the gun and that sort of stuff, I have that stuff on Amazon, as well as training videos, if that's more to your taste. It's all got a competitive shooting bent to it, so I have to warn you, you know, about that. That's not something you're interested in, then you probably wouldn't like any of that stuff. But if you are interested, then no, I have that stuff.
Well, and I think that something that I've certainly tried to get across to people is that when you focus all of your attentions on only one aspect of something, it's really hard to get a complete understanding of that topic, in my opinion, for what my opinion is worth. So I would I would highly encourage everybody to go out and compete if they have the resources to do so or learn more about it.
Yeah.
What are you looking forward to this year, man? Is there anything in particular that stands out?
Yeah, so I got a slot to go to the European Handgun Championships, which probably doesn't sound like a huge deal to Americans, but the European Handgun Championship happens once every 3 years.
Nice.
So it's not a very common thing, and everybody who's not an American will be there. So that's going to be the biggest match in the world this year will be in Budapest. So I got a slot to go, and I'm going with one of my friends. He's also a competitive shooter. There's only 3 Americans going.
Nice.
And I'm happy to be one of them, and I'm looking forward to the trip. I've had plenty of fun in Eastern Europe in the last couple of years, and I have no doubt that this trip will be the same. So I'm just going to have a good time and go shoot a really big match. And that's probably the thing I'm most excited about this year.
When's that happening?
October.
Plenty of time to get ready for that one then. I really appreciate you coming on the show tonight. I know it was kind of last minute because that's how I do these
things. That's how you do it. That's fine.
Yeah.
I'm the same way.
It's worked out pretty well for me doing it that way. But, like I said, if you're on the fence, I would really recommend going, checking out Ben's books, videos, stuff like that. I know he didn't really say so because he's humbler than people say he is, but he's probably on any given day one of the top 5 shooters in the world. Highly recommended. Dude, I appreciate it. I hope you have a good evening.
I will. Thank you for having me.
Hey, no worries. So be safe, brother. I'll talk to you later.
Later.
Bye. So next week, season 3 finale.
Woo!
We're going to be giving stuff away, answering your questions. Extra super special awesome show next week. Should have some cool prizes too. So anyway, make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com. Like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe. See you next week!